This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Four months ago, I sat in the studio for one of our first coronavirus podcasts, talking about how to affect people of Wuhan and people of the world. And here we are, 4 months later, and China has been transformed by this pandemic, and so is the world. And this week, China is finally ready to host its most important annual political meeting. In Chinese, we call it Lianghui. In English, it simply refers to the two sessions. Welcome to a special edition of Inside China. My name is Mimi Lau. Today, you're going to hear from two of my colleagues who will unpack the two sessions for you, explaining why it is important, where's China heading to from here, and what is going to be on President Xi Jinping's agenda for the year ahead. With me is Alan Wong, editor of Inkstone, a sister site of the SCMP. Alan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what can you tell us about this annual parliamentary session that is about to happen in Beijing, which is supposed to be happening in March and has postponed for 2 months?
Yeah, this is the most important political event on the Chinese calendar every year. China nerds and political analysts will be looking at Beijing for clues to China's future. So the two sessions refer to two different political bodies. Those two bodies are NPC and the CPPCC.
Break it down for me. What is the NPC and what is the CPPCC?
Right. We're talking about these acronyms for a reason, because those names are long. The NPC stands for the National People's Congress. The CPPCC stands for an even longer organization name, which is the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. So every year, those two bodies gather in Beijing in the Great Hall of the People to talk about important things. One of the two bodies is more important than the other, which is the NPC, the National People's Congress, which is basically like the British Parliament or the American Congress, with a lot of Chinese lawmakers. How many of them exactly? 3,000.
So Alan, you told us what NPC stand for, what is its equivalent form in the US or other Western democratic system. Can you also explain what exactly is a CPPCC?
Yep, the CPPCC, the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, is China's top political advisory committee. So imagine 2,000 advisors to the Chinese government. They are made up of about 2,000 representatives from different political parties. And yes, there's more than one political party in China. We'll get to that later. And also social groups, professions, different sectors, and other organizations. In the past couple of years, a lot more of those delegates have come from the tech sector, because they've become such an important pillar of the Chinese economy. And a lot of the people involved in those sectors have gained influence. So they're given positions in the CPPCC as an advisor to the Chinese government.
What do they exactly give advice on?
They talk about a range of things, and then a lot of meetings are actually held behind closed doors. So we actually don't know exactly what went down in those meetings. But you can imagine that a lot of the important things they'll be talking about is about China's economy. And right now, because of the pandemic, I assume that a lot of them will talk about public health in China, investment in medical infrastructure and things like that.
So with the CPPCC delegates, there are about 2,000 of them. Are there any household names that our American listeners or other international listeners might be familiar to?
Yeah, this is the beauty of China's CPPCC, is that you will see celebrities in there, unlike in, let's say, the Britain's House of Lords or the US Senate. Some of the names you might recognize, such as Jackie Chan, the martial arts and movie superstar, as well as the NBA star Yao Ming. So why are those celebrities in the CPPCC? Because that's what the CPPCC is designed for, is to project an image of diversity within the ranks of the Chinese officialdom. Though they're not really, technically not Chinese officials, but they're meant to represent the broader society, because right now the Chinese government made up of a very small and particular group of people, the political elite. The CPPCC, in a way, is designed to make sure that people feel that their voice is being heard in the highest level of the Chinese government.
Obviously, we also get the representatives from the working class, like migrant workers, like delegates representing different ethnic minorities. That's why we see people wearing extravagant ethnic costumes walking into the Great Hall of the People. So we understand that parliamentary sessions this year has been postponed for 2 months due to the pandemic of COVID-19. How is it different this year with this in terms of attendance, in terms of journalist covering, and also the agenda we're looking at? Can you give us an overview?
The pandemic has left little things untouched, really, in all aspects of society, which includes this year's two sessions. Like you said, it's been postponed for 2 months. And because of the fear of a second wave of infections, a lot of measures have been taken to prevent that from happening in the highest and the most powerful body of Chinese politics. So which means that for reporters like us, we won't be able to go, and a lot fewer reporters will be allowed in to the building itself to cover the meetings. As a result, a lot of the meetings and interviews will be done remotely through video conferencing, like we've been doing with a lot of our coworkers. Normally, reporters would use this event to catch a glimpse of politicians or influential people in business that they wouldn't otherwise see or be able to interview in the hallways of the Great Hall of the People or even outside a bathroom.
The sidelines of the conferences. So we understand that it's not happening anymore. And why is that?
Because of the pandemic, everything has been basically brought to a halt. And that includes the arrangement for national, local, or international journalists. So this year, you wouldn't see them waiting outside a bathroom for some politician to walk out and ask them questions.
And not to mention a bunch of them have been kicked out of China.
Not to mention that, yes, they've been kicked out of China, and I don't think they can get anywhere near the Great Hall of the People or the Tiananmen Square.
Can you highlight what is particularly interesting for this year's annual parliamentary sessions?
This year is really special, not just for China, as you can probably tell, but for China, it's especially important because it happens to be the deadline, Beijing set itself, to double its GDP size from the year 2010. And that has also led to arguments about whether China should adhere to that goal and timeline in this post-corona world. Mm-hmm. And that has effectively not just pushed the meetings themselves 2 months behind, but also all of those goals.
The sessions are opening this Friday. What are to be expected in the first few days of these conferences?
Expect to hear a lot about jobs. Because in a post-pandemic world, China's unemployment rate has shot up. And we don't even know the true extent of how bad unemployment has gotten. So Xi Jinping and Li Keqiang will be talking over and over again about how to create jobs and how to stabilize the economy. And obviously, because of the pandemic, expect to hear a lot about China's plans for how to improve its public health services and infrastructure to prevent the next big one.
So, Ellen, you have covered the two sessions before. Can you tell us what the experience was like from a journalist's perspective?
When I did it a couple of years ago, I remember how the security was super tight. Obviously, everybody who goes into the Great Hall of the People has to be double-checked, going through airport-style security. But today, I can imagine that the security is even more over the top. In earlier years, the roads leading to the Tiananmen Square would be shut off to normal passenger cars. But then there are times when political activists actually try to take a cab to the Tiananmen Square and roll down the window to drop the leaflet to express their political opinion. But that has been impossible in the past couple of years because cabs are required to have their windows locked during the 2 weeks of the two sessions. So political activists would not have a chance.
Given all of these tight security measures, people would ask, okay, there's not many surprises going on, but why are people still going after it? The China nerds, the journalists, why are these people still going after it? Why do you think our readers or listeners should really make an effort to learn the significance of the annual parliamentary sessions in China?
This year is a really special year, not just because of the pandemic, but also because how U.S.-China relations are at their worst in at least four decades. So if you're listening in the U.S., this certainly matters to you. China political analysts will be watching the two sessions for clues to how China is planning on taking on the U.S. accusations that it mishandled the coronavirus outbreak or its generally worsening relationship with not just the United States, but with a lot of its Western allies. There are people talking about another Cold War between the United States and China. We'll be reading and listening to see whether China want to project a strong world front or try to emphasize cooperation with the US.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Thanks, Mimi.
With us here is Teddy Ng, one of the China desk editor for the South China Morning Post. Teddy, you've been covering the annual parliamentary session as a reporter and an editor for almost 10 years. Can you tell us why should people pay attention to this year's annual parliamentary session?
Well, I think this year's parliamentary sessions is the most special parliamentary gathering for China in decades. I think I can say that. The Chinese economy is badly hit by the COVID-19 pandemic, and it suffers a lot. The GDP, the latest GDP figures, is the lowest in record. So it will be interesting to see, how the Chinese government is going to achieve the GDP growth and what kind of measures they are going to implement in order to achieve that goal. And most importantly, as the GDP forecast made by the Chinese government, which will be revealed in Premier Li Keqiang's government work report.
So apart from Premier Li Keqiang's work report, where else should people be looking for signs of the Chinese government going to tackle the biggest economic decline since the Great Famine?
Well, I'm not sure about this year's. Because in the past gathering of the Nationalist People's Congress, we can join some of the sections where the delegates will discuss government policies. And on the sideline of these gatherings, we can ask them questions. We can get an assessment of what they're thinking about what's happening inside China. But this year, because of the COVID-19, the gathering is held under a very special arrangement. They do it online, other than the government work report. I think the ministerial officials of the Chinese government will come out to give a roundup of what they did over the past years and what they look forward for the coming year. So from their presentations and remarks, we can see how the Chinese government is going to deal with the aftermath of the COVID-19 and whether they are going to implement some fiscal measures or policies. Yeah.
So Teddy, China is right at the end of its five-year plan. Any indication where this giant nation is heading to in the next 5 years?
One particular reason this MPC gathering is so important is that China is heading towards the end of the five-year plan. And it goes towards eradication of poverty by 2020. But over these past 6 months, because of COVID-19, a lot of things and developments of the nations have been stalled because a lot of Chinese cities are under lockdown. But Chinese state media have repeatedly said that the goal for the developments of the nation will not be changed. So it will be challenging for the Chinese government to achieve their goal of, getting rid of poverty by 2020, and think of an action plan for the development over the next 5 years.
But any indication where we might be heading to, or this is the exact question everyone should be asking in this year's parliamentary sessions?
I think this is the questions everyone should be asking.
So we have observed China has been responding to the international backlash against its handling of the pandemic and China has been resorting to nationalistic agenda at home and abroad. How would the Chinese government address the international backlash?
Okay, to many Chinese policymakers or policy advisors, the international environment facing China is increasingly hostile. Especially after the COVID-19 pandemic, there's a rising call for an investigation into the origin of the virus. Some nations, particularly the United States, have been saying that the pandemic may be related to the Wuhan Virology Lab. And some other nations have also been calling for China to be held responsible for the outbreak. And some US states have launched a lawsuit against China for the handling of the pandemic. So to many Chinese policymakers and advisors, the international environment is getting increasingly hostile. But how the Chinese government is going to handle such what they say hostile environment seems to be a divisive issue. Some of the people we talked to suggest China should take a more a hardliner approach to address the criticism by Western nations. So we see the Chinese diplomats are getting more assertive and what some people describe them as wolf warrior when they respond to some of these critics. But on the other hand, we also see some Chinese scholars and government advisors calling for calming down of tensions and stopping the blame game with the United States in particular, as they believe this kind of tensions, if we just let it go out of control, will be damaging to China as well.
Teddy, we saw President Xi Jinping giving a speech at the World Health Assembly this week, indicating China is ready to lead the world into response of the pandemic. Any sign that this kind of gesture will be strengthened or stepped up?
I think the Chinese government will continue calling for more international cooperation to contain this pandemic. In particular, supporting the work of the World Health Organization. US President Donald Trump has threatened to freeze the funding to WHO within 30 days if the UN health agencies did not come up with reform. I think over the past few months, we have seen Chinese officials, on one hand, they rebuke the criticisms by Western nations regarding how China handled the COVID-19 pandemic. On the other hand, they are also stressing that there should be more international cooperation in order to contain this pandemic. I think the Chinese government will continue to call for stepping up the role of the WHO in the NPC.
Okay, thank you so much for your time, Teddy. We look forward to more in-depth analysis over the coverage of NPC and CPPCC in the coming weeks or so. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That's all we have for you today for the special two-session Inside China podcast. And follow us on scmp.com for the most updated and insightful coverage of the two sessions, Liang Hui. My name is Mimi Lau. See you soon.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.